Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. Forecasters in L.A. County say historic Santa Ana winds have spread deadly flames, and after a short break, Rich Thompson with the National Weather Service says more wind is coming.
So we have expectations of those moderate to strong Santa Ana winds, critical fire weather conditions. That red flag warning is in effect until 6 p.m. Wednesday.
Amid talk of a potential temporary ceasefire, Israel's offensive in Gaza continues, and CBS's Ed O'Keefe reports.
It's a sign of potential hope for a region mired in war and human suffering since the October 7th, 2023 Hamas attack on Israel. More than 46,000 Palestinians have been killed, according to the Hamas-run Palestinian Ministry of Health.
The FAA is investigating a close call between a United flight and a Delta jet over Phoenix on Saturday. CBS News has learned alarms sounded in both cockpits. Correspondent Chris Van Cleve.
At their closest points, they were about 425 feet apart vertically, and seconds later were less than a quarter of a mile horizontally, according to preliminary flight data from Flight Radar 24.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
Join us live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Playmakers, brought to you by Quality Plus Printing. Call in with your sports thoughts and feelings only on WFHR.
The Packers lose to the Eagles. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers fell behind early and lost to the Eagles 22-10 to bring Green Bay's season to an end. Head coach Matt LaFleur.
You can't start the way that we did and to fumble the opening kick and then turn it into a touchdown and be set down 7-0 from the jump. You know, it was obviously too much to overcome. But I appreciate the heck out of our guys in that locker room. Those guys show up every day with a great attitude, great energy, and compete. And I thought our guys competed to the final whistle.
Quarterback Jordan Love threw three interceptions in the game and was asked what happened to the Packers' offense in losses to Minnesota, Chicago, and now Philadelphia.
I'm not sure. You know, it's something that we'll look at and figure out in the offseason to clean up. But, yeah, I mean, it's pretty much just comes down to executing and making plays out there and just wasn't good enough.
NBA, the Bucks losing to the Knicks 140-106. New York's Jalen Brunson with 41 points. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Sports allow us to play, learn, and grow. But there's something more important than victory. At the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, we believe every athlete deserves to be safe. Safe from abuse and misconduct on and off the field. We equip athletes, parents, coaches, and others with the right education to recognize, prevent, and respond to harmful behavior. Join the movement to champion respect and end abuse at uscenterforsafesport.org.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. You know, watching these clips and watching the stories coming out of California and the horrible tragedies that are happening every minute of the day. It's amazing to me that, you know, the story that doesn't get reported is the people who are out there fighting these fires. About 40% of them are actually prison labor, convict labor. The firefighters who are out there with, you know, 100-foot-high flames are people who are making $2 an hour, hoping to get an extra day off of their sentence. You've got this, you know, about 4,000 of these convict labor folks who are fighting these fires. And what you get out of the Republicans are finger pointing. Oh, it's the Democrats who did this. No, this is terrible stuff. This is the result of, oh, I don't know. You know, there's a thing, something about change, something about climate, something about that. And I know, as I, you know, as I've said a bunch of times, my red hat friends don't believe in it. But you know who believes in climate change? Evidently the insurance companies. Because you had, you know, State Farm, one of the largest insurance companies in the country, one of the biggest ones in California. They canceled a whole bunch of policies, you know, last summer, where these fires are happening, where the homes are being ravaged in this moment. They kind of know. They knew what was coming. They've done the work, And, you know, they argue, well, you know, we're just trying to stay, you know, financially, you know, stable. We want to avoid a financial failure. Yeah, we want to shift the risk onto someone else, the homeowner or the taxpayer. Now, again, this is what you have these for-profit companies. They're not in business to protect. They're not in business to insure. They're not in business to make lives better. They're in business to make money. And this is where I talked about last week, the fact that you cannot run government like a business. Because if you ran government like a business, we would be leaving these people high and dry, like the for-profit insurance industry is doing. And this isn't just California. It's Florida. It's other states where the risks are real. And you have these companies going, not in our best interest. It's not in our interest to protect these people. It's not in our interest to protect these communities. It's in our profit motive interest to dump these people to the curb. And what you end up having is you end up having states who have to then come in and backstop that. You know, California has this FAIR plan, which is, you know, when a company won't insure something, the state will step in and create something of a program. That, according to Cap Radio, between 2020 and 2024, you've got what, 452,000 more policies, more than doubled the kind of policies that they did in the past, just in a massive increase. And what do we get from our Republican friends? Well, more blame. Nothing really in the way of policy. Nothing in the way of holding people accountable, especially these companies who for years have taken the profits and the money from these folks to protect their homes, only to go, sorry, we're looking at the forecast for the future doesn't look great. The forecast of our profitability, our interests over that of the community, not great. And what's going to happen is, well, you're going to have the prison labor come in and clean up the mess. And taxpayers are going to foot the bill. Because as Joe Biden said, the federal government is going to backstop it again. They're going to give as much relief money as needed. Now, that could change come January 20th. But for right now, President Biden has thrown his full support behind them, which you should be doing. Will be interesting to see what the Republicans do, because there have been some voices saying, well, if we don't get our pound of flesh, sorry, blue state, might not get help. And this is the problem with our politic. This is the problem of the moment we're in. These kind of disasters should pull us together. This kind of tragedy should pull a country together, not tear us apart based on who we voted for or who's holding what office. But it's where we are, folks. Sadly. It's sadly where we are. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. And if you're in those areas, our hearts and our thoughts all go out to you. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Right back with our good friend Pete Dominic from Stand Up with Pete. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, it's interesting that, you know, most of the Republican Party and basically all of the Red Hat Brigade, they may not believe in climate change. They may not believe climate change is real. They may not believe it's happening, but you know who does? You know, clearly, insurance companies. They're buying it because look at what they're doing down in Florida. They're gathering the sheep and they're getting the flock out. And as I said, look what happened in California. Are we surprised by it? No, corporate America always takes care of themselves. This, again, is why running a country, a government, like a business, not such a great idea. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the tragedies that's going on out west and some of the pushback that we're seeing. For instance, Republican Representative Warren Davidson of Ohio, maybe we'll just hold that disaster relief until California does some stuff. But I've asked my good friend Pete Dominic to come share some thoughts. Pete is the host of Stand Up with Pete. You can find his podcast wherever you get your favorite podcast. Pete, thanks for taking time for us.
Always for you, Rick. Always a pleasure to join you. Such important issues to talk about, and great to see you, my friend.
So what do you make of this? You know, shocking. State Farm, some of the insurers. We're going to drop some people because, hey, they're in high risk areas and we don't want to have to pay claims.
You know, there's a really interesting article about this in The New Yorker by Elizabeth Colbert titled "The Insurance Crisis That Will Follow the California Fires," because for years, experts have warned that homeowner policies in the state could easily collapse. And I mean, it's almost inevitable. I don't really understand the nuances of how homeowners insurance works or any insurance works, but I'm one for, you know, publicizing it or making it, nationalizing it rather, because how could private insurance possibly be able to both pay out their policies and pay their employees and cover their costs? I mean, there's got to be some kind of minimum national insurance, especially now given, as you mentioned, the threats that are only going to become more and more often and more impactful, intense because of climate change. So whether it's Florida and floods, the Gulf Coast, or hurricanes and wildfires in the West, something's going to have to change, or you're not going to be able to own a home unless you're super wealthy and you don't necessarily need, you know, insurance. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, some of these wealthy people, as you know, I'm sure probably read about, they've got private firefighters, but they still lost their homes, yeah. Some of them. So it's a really fraught situation for this and so many other reasons as a result of climate. How do you possibly predict the actuarial outcomes of all of these different threats as climate change becomes more intense? And we just had our, you know, hottest year on record, which is something we hear at the beginning of every year. Last year was the hottest year on on record, and this year starts with the worst fire disaster maybe ever in America, in California for sure.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. And for me, it's like a lot of this insurance things. I mean, we can argue health insurance as well. These companies set up in places where they can maximize their profits, and they know how to mitigate their risks. And, you know, in areas that might be prone to fires, we're just not going to cover those areas.
Yeah, I mean, in California, they have something, a policy for homeowners who can't find fire insurance, right, called the Fair Access to Insurance,
right,
plan. It's called the FAIR plan. But it's operated by private companies, which pool the risks, and there's the same system in Florida, Louisiana, Texas, or similar entities. Colorado recently established one. And as insurers apparently have pulled out of California, the number of policies written by the state's plan, this FAIR plan, has risen steep. It just keeps going up.
Right.
So since late 2023, apparently, it's grown by more than 40%, Rick. So it's like nothing is going to be sustainable, even well-meaning government plans and policies. And it's hard to see where we go.
No, and this is the same argument I make for health insurance. I mean, we have taken the sickest people out of the private health insurance market. You know, as you know, most people use their health care first 5 years, last 5 years of life. And Medicaid picks up over half of the childbirths in this country and covers most children. And Medicare covers, you know, seniors for the final years of their life. We give the private corporations, the for-profit folks, we let them cherry pick the healthy people so they can make profit off them. And I fear we're doing we've actually done the same thing in all other facets, yeah. To where the profitable stuff we give to the private industries, and then we, the taxpayers, backstop everything else instead of just saying, hey, how about we just backstop at all.
Yeah, well, you know, when you have a society like ours, which is, I think, different than a lot of other civilized Western countries for sure, and more OECD countries, that is been taught for a few generations now to hate government and to think that government is the problem, to think that the people who work in the government are just lazy bureaucrats, it leads to the conclusions that you're pointing to. I mean, that the government can't do anything, when in fact, obviously, it can do a lot of things. But, you know, when we look at these fires, it's a perfect example of just people not being able to handle a few ideas at once. People not being able to understand that a disaster like this is not simple. There wasn't a simple fix. There wasn't some way to prevent it that leaders looked away from. These are really complex disasters and issues. And even with the most well-meaning policymakers and the most adequately funded resources, you would still have disasters like this.
Yeah, but hold on, Pete. You know, I saw Mel Gibson on one of those, you know, Fox type shows saying, they might have done it on purpose. And they may have had all that water reserve gone, you know, for nefarious means. Just asking.
Yeah, he's a despicable person. He's been making the rounds. I don't know why. He was on Joe Rogan, and while he was on Joe Rogan, spreading other conspiracies and lies, terrible ones like that. He knows people personally that have beat stage 4 cancer by taking some kind of sugar pill, some bull, you know, while he's spreading that dangerous, awful idea, his house was burning down. Mel Gibson is despicable, and I feel badly. I'm mad at myself for ever enjoying anything he ever did, even when I didn't know how bad he was. Like, I'm still like, I don't have enough just disdain that I could possibly verbalize for that man. He is an awful, awful person. And so are so many other people who are jumping on this and politicizing this. We have to be okay with an understanding of that there are certain situations in life that there's very little we could have done to prevent. And there's not a lot we can do to solve, but that we can learn from whatever's happening. When it comes to climate, you know, I've been covering this issue my entire career. And the only real answer is to try to adapt. And it's messy. And people are going to die. And people are going to lose their homes. And it's not going to be easy. But we're going to have to keep trying to adapt as a species and trying to make the problem less worse. And, you know, we're not doing a very good job of it. But in this case, it's a perfect example of the fact that people just can't possibly imagine that they don't have somebody, one person to blame, entity to blame. And if you did, it would be climate and it would be our species.
No,
but it's our entire species in that case. And that doesn't really make anybody feel better. So these complaints that they're making about the government and that it's Democrats and these threats that you mentioned from congressmen, I heard John Barroso on ABC's This Week basically saying we're going to have to take a look at these liberal policies that led to this disaster before we start handing out federal aid, as if that federal aid ever pivoted on the past decisions of politicians. It's really, really tough to hear a guy like him.
No, I'm with you.
Or anyone.
But there's help on the way. There's help on the way. Evidently, we're going to make Greenland a state. We're taking over somehow. Because according to J.D. Vance, there's a deal to be made on Greenland. And also, we're going to take over Canada. We're going to make that a state, the 51st state. So, you know, if Byron Donalds is right, if we do make Canada the 51st state, that's two more Democratic senators. And Greenland, most certainly, there are going to be a couple Democratic senators, them and their 40% union density. So, you know, as we're expanding the country, it could actually be, I don't know, good. Maybe some people talking about unions, maybe the environment, maybe some good stuff coming out of that.
Well, you know, Rick, when you look at Greenland, when you look at Canada, you've got a lot of ice, a lot of water. And if we're going to be able to build a giant funnel coming from Greenland, coming from Canada, as I say, they say, and we're going to put all that ice and water on these fires, something that Sleepy Joe and Gavin Newsom really just won't do because they're weak, but we're going to do it. That's what we're going to do. We're going to get it done. We'll see how it works. I mean, if he said that, you'd be like, yeah, it sounds about like something he'd say.
No, I would. I look, and I'm I'm listening to you. Then go, you're a funny guy. I love your comedy, but that's not funny. We're going to have 4 years of that nonsense.
You know, Rick, it's going to be real funny, actually. You'll see. Just watch. Just watch.
I mean, I talk a lot about the anticipatory anxiety of him arriving, much less what we're going to be dealing with every day. And, you know, I just want to repeat to your audience and to you and to everybody what I repeat to myself and on my daily show, which is I have to find coping mechanisms or, you know, cognitive behavioral exercises that won't allow his daily onslaught of horribleness and distraction to affect my relationships in my life and to affect my own mood. Do what I can as much as I can. But, you know, so often in our lives, this man takes so much of our power and takes so much space in our heads. Yeah. And it makes sense. It's not, you know, it's not irrational. It's that you have to come up with, I have to come up with new emotional coping mechanisms so that I can, when triggered, be mindful of it and be like, I'm not taking this out on someone I love or even myself. I'm not going to let this ruin my afternoon. I'm going to acknowledge it, and I'm going to try to do something, whatever I can.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's something, you know, not direct, something nice for somebody even to make the moment better. So we have to adapt to him as we have to adapt to so many other things in life, it seems.
No, look, I've been saying the solutions that will come out of the suffering due to their savagery. I can't stop it. It's going to happen. I have to prepare on how to fight when I can. Yeah. And to, you know, and then build for a future where we can undo the damage that is coming when hopefully those who are most affected, the ones who wearing the red hats, wake up to the reality that when he was talking about.
I think what you're saying is well said and accurate, that the suffering will come as solutions through what happens. I mean, we have to go through
That's
it.
The point.
Again, I mean, like, I think the evidence of what you're saying is when he was president, the first nightmare. That the only reason he didn't get reelected, arguably, was COVID.
Right.
There had to be millions of Americans suffering, hundreds of thousands dying during his presidency and his mishandling of it for people to enough people, and it was a small margin, to wake up and say, you know, this guy didn't handle that well at all or didn't even seem to care. And we need somebody who's going to be, you know, be able to roll out a vaccine and support it, or else we might never get over this nightmare of COVID. And I'm not saying it's going to be a pandemic or anything like that, but it will be either some economic issue, some foreign policy disaster, some natural disaster that he mishandles. I mean, it's going to be something like that.
Or and all the pain, three.
Or all three. And yeah, the pain could be really widespread. And unfortunately, that as you said, the suffering is going to be the solution, it would seem. And that's real daunting. Real daunting.
Because look, in this country, we only address problems and we only unite around crisis. So I do believe what's coming out of this administration will be crisis. But here, you know, the chaos merchants and the crisis merchants met on Friday in Mar-a-Lago. You had the Freedom Caucus down at Mar-a-Lago for a big powwow and Trump trying to charm them on board. You had Doge Boy there who made an appearance. Because look,
Elon or Vivek?
Well, Doge Boy. It's always going to be Elon because the other one. I
just don't love it. I don't love Doge Boy because it almost feels like it's not giving him enough power. It's almost like not. He's so much more than that. I mean, the guy is now interfering in so many other countries having to deal with him. And now to see the MAGA civil war taking place between Steve Bannon and as you call him, Doge Boy, that's fascinating. And I didn't mean to interrupt you.
But you did.
So you can, you know, so there's another MAGA event Friday. There's one tonight too.
Yeah. Well, there was one Friday. There's one Sunday, where he's bringing people in to do their, you know, to schmooze and to meet Elon. And what I'm waiting for is for the bromance to break the two of them up. Because I think that's going to be an interesting story because Trump will tire of Musk and Musk not going to take it well. I don't think he will go quietly into that good night that Trump would want to put him into. So it's going to be interesting. And look, you even had, you know, like you said, Steve Bannon saying, you know, he's ready to get rid of, he's not prepared to tolerate Musk anymore and that, you know, Trump should kick him out. So For me, that's
I mean, that's an understatement. I mean, Steve Bannon called him all kinds of names, sure, including a racist. Like, Steve Bannon calling Elon Musk a racist
that's is something.
Really something. Like,
there's
that's
something
me,
about a pot and a kettle.
Well, it's like me calling another bald guy super bald. Like, I mean, like, what? I can't quite figure out what the analogy is. They're all racists. And Steve Bannon's super racist. And he's calling Elon a racist. And, you know, I mean, that is something. And then he's basically saying all South Africans are racist. I am here for the Elon Bannon fight. But, yeah, go ahead.
No, I think eventually Trump has to get rid of him. And, you know, Musk, you know, he spent a lot of money. He's got a lot of ego there. I think it's going to be entertaining. I think that if anything stalls their steamroller, it will be that fight.
Yeah, I don't know what that looks like. I can't imagine. We're going to see some. It's going to come to a head.
It has to.
I mean, but he needs Elon Musk so much more than any one individual. And rightly so. Elon Musk did so much more than any one individual to get him reelected. So he also has something that nobody else has, which is 200 million followers on Twitter, and he owns the platform, and that matters a lot, I think. And it's like, I just don't see him throwing Elon Musk away, because Elon Musk is unlimited money, and that is something different than anyone else that Trump has ever allied with. Nobody has been that kind of resource to him. He is a constant funnel of unlimited cash. That is not someone that you burn down. And I think Trump's smart enough to know that.
Yeah, $500 billion. So the question then becomes, and because I've had these arguments with some of my conservative friends who are now looking at Musk and going, maybe we shouldn't have a guy worth $500 billion. Maybe there shouldn't be somebody who has this kind of outweighed power that could conceivably take down a president.
I mean, it's interesting that you're having those conversations with people who are Trump supporters, but.
Well, because it came about because of the H-1B visa dust up. You know, they're like, right, no, we got to get those immigrants out of here, and Musk's going to screw that up. That, you know, was an interesting little battleground right there.
Yeah, and he also, you know, Steve Bannon is doing a pretty good job of at least paraphrasing, if he didn't quite say, that Elon Musk called Americans lazy retards, the R word. I don't use much, but I'm quoting him. And they didn't like that, and understandably so. So it they you know, these kind of issues, as I started to say about the fires, everything has to be a binary. The best media outlet and personality makes it this or that, right, black or white,
yeah,
you or me, tribal, binary. And Bannon's doing a pretty good job making Elon Musk that binary. He's for this, we're for that. It's not the same thing. And so, you know, Bannon's a pretty powerful, influential media host, and we'll see where the others in that world line up, but this is starting off to be, it's going to be a big fight for a while.
So let me ask you, you know, because then obviously the big inauguration, the coronation is coming up. Last question I've got for you. What are we expecting? Day one dictator. What are we expecting?
Flood the zone with it's going to be something that we're all going to have to decide how we're going to cover. And how we're going to take it in, and how much we're going to let it animate our lives, because that day one is going to be a shitstorm of announcements and reversals of Biden era policies and appointments of cartoon villains that we haven't necessarily seen or heard, as well as, you know, behaviors. And on inauguration day, you know, who all is going to show up? We saw all the presidents, ex-presidents, spouses at Jimmy Carter's funeral. And I mean, how much attention did that get in media? I mean, and there wasn't even a conversation. We just saw people talking and shaking or not shaking the former and future felon president's hand. And that got vacuumed up a lot, yeah, of media space. And I'm sure Inauguration Day is going to be doing something similar. And the days after, they're going to flood the zone with controversial comments, appointments, and policies. And we're going to have to react. We're always having to react and be reactionary to day-to-day stuff. And it's exhausting, but what else are we supposed to do? I mean, you can't give up. As I mean, a lot of people are turning away and saying, I can't do this anymore, and putting their heads in the sand or trying to be optimistic about what might come.
Not
or
the answer.
You know, and I'm one of those, you know, who knows? We don't know exactly how bad it's going to be or who it's going to be the worst for. There could be some things we're absolutely overblowing and overreacting to. So I'm here for outcomes that I couldn't predict it. But uncertainty, as you know more than anybody, Rick, is a real son of a bitch, and it sits on your shoulder and it's just constantly knocking on you going, you don't know what's going to happen and you should worry.
There you go. Pete Dominic, appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Podcast Stand Up with Pete Dominic. We'll get links out on social media how you can check out his great work. Pete, as always, great stuff, my friend.
Thank you, buddy. I appreciate you very much.
Good stuff. I want to hear your thoughts. What are you paying attention to on day one? Evidently, J.D. Vance, not sure about the dictator thing. Could there be more of those divisions? This could be the entertainment. Right back after this.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Partly cloudy and cold tonight, a low near 5 below, wind chills to 20 below. Sunny and up to 10 above for a high tomorrow. Warmer Wednesday with sun, low 20s. Continued warming Thursday and Friday, temps well into the 30s before much colder air returns for the weekend. Right now it's 1.
Ready, set, go. Get in the game and be heard with WFHR's Playmakers. Join us 5 to 6 Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. We're here to take your calls, sports takes, and ramblings. We'll have breaking stories, game day conversations with players, coaches, and you. Nobody ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Join the team here at WFHR 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, 5 to 6 PM Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for WFHR's Playmakers.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got to tell you, I had a whole bunch of people over the last couple of years telling me, Donald Trump's going to jail. They're going to lock him up. He's going to be in orange and pinstripes, and he's going to be behind the bars with the tin cup. And I remember saying, there is no world in which Donald Trump is going to go to jail. And I still believe no matter what he does, he's not going to jail because we don't put rich people in jail. We don't do it. It's not what we do. And especially not someone like him. So shocker of shockers, Friday was the big sentencing and, well, no punishment. It'll be on his record. There'll be a stain for now, but no jail time. Here to share some thoughts on, well, the big sentencing and the letdown for a lot in our community. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burris to come share some thoughts. Sarah's an excellent reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. If you want to take a look at the work that they do. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, how the heck are you?
So, yeah, I think we've had this conversation a number of times over the years. I know I've had it with a lot of people. I've said from the beginning, no jail time ever. No jail time.
I was holding out hope until he got elected, and then I was pretty much like, yeah, that's never going to happen. The good news, if there is any in this situation, is they could very easily have tried to just sort of dismiss this whole case and push forward with that. And the thing that I like about Juan Merchan moving forward with the sentencing and making that happen is that piece of it where he is officially a convicted criminal. There are some rules that he has to follow now, or like he can't vote and can't have a gun. So he's going to have to, you know, figure that stuff out. So that piece of it, it's like the smallest of wins,
yeah.
Right? If there is anything that we can have out of this, that is the only part of it that is worth it. And, you know, it's still maybe something where he pardons himself.
Can he do that on a state crime?
No, you're right. He can't. And the thing, too, is that anytime he pardons himself for anything, he has to admit guilt.
Right.
So you're right. So this is completely forgot that that was a state crime. But yeah, so so that's good at the very least. I know he'll probably go to the state Supreme Court trying to get rid of it. I don't think that'll happen because usually like jury cases, they don't tend to futz with. Yeah, so.
Yeah. No, and look, you know, he tried to go to the Supreme Court to have it set aside. Were you shocked, as I was, that that his Supreme Court made him go be sentenced? Because I got to be honest, kind of was, especially when we heard the news that Alito was, you know, trying to barter for one of his former staffers to get a gig. You knew that there was some kind of a, hey, I'll get your guy the gig, but, you know, I'm going to be asking for something. Were you surprised?
I really was surprised, in large part because I feel like we have the most corrupt Supreme Court in American history. And so it would not surprise me at all if any of his people were just like, see ya. What has been the most surprising over the last several months, though, is that who knew Amy Coney Barrett, right? Like there have been a couple of decisions of hers where you're just like, whoa, really? And so, I mean, I'm not surprised that... the one conservative holdout would be John Roberts. I was really surprised with her. And so, I mean, there are a couple of issues where Gorsuch is a little bit more liberal on issues. Anything that has to do with Native American sovereignty is a big thing for him. With Barrett, though, I mean, I really thought that she was like, woohoo, way out there.
See, now I had she was going through the confirmation process, I had a couple of guests on who were saying, you know, she's a true believer, and with the true believer crowd, you never quite know where their true belief is, and their loyalty to Trump, that's not where it's going to be, because she's a true believer, you know, kind of a religious kind of zealot, if you will, and that's a whole nother kind of animal, and you know, part of me goes, yeah, they were right.
Yeah, who knew? I mean, honestly, I didn't expect that at all. Maybe that's just the Debbie Downer in me, but I was more surprised that I thought maybe if we were lucky, Gorsuch, but, you know. I'm curious. I mean, I know that the Alito conversation was about, you know, trying to put in a good word. I wonder, too, though, if Trump is needling him about getting out of, you know, like retiring so that he could appoint somebody else. Because I know that, you know, those conservative judicial people are just like aching to put two more super young people on the bench.
You get over to him and Thomas. Yeah. That court is sealed for the next 50 to 75 years.
Yeah. I mean, unless something terrible happens, like, you know, one of them gets hit by a bus or. Dies wow.
Now you're giving people hope. Stop that.
I know, or like somebody gets just to fold that in. It could be like alien abduction, like really anything at this point, right?
Yeah. No. Look, I don't have a lot of faith in our Supreme Court, and look, I don't have a lot of faith in our justice system as a whole. I mean, look, on Friday, Jack Smith resigned. We find out we may never know what the investigation was, and that's one of those things where at least. You know, we paid for the investigation. We as taxpayers paid for it. We should at least see it.
The thing that is the most frustrating about that story is Jack Smith did not have to give Trump or anybody any kind of heads up, right? He did it out of this like gentlemanly BS thing. I don't know, this like nice guy Justice Department BS. And there was no legal obligation that he had to like give Trump the report early on. He didn't have to give Judge Cannon a heads up and be like, hey, at 1 o'clock, I'm handing this over. And so, you know, that's my timeline. So that then she jumped in and at 12:06 was like, nope, you can't hand it over to anybody. That whole thing was just so absurd and ridiculous. And I mean, I feel like there have been a lot of missteps where.
Yeah, we didn't on January 7th start arresting people. We didn't. 4 years, we still don't have anything to do with January 6th. Nothing really with the boxes. I mean, this, I know the wheels of justice grind slowly, but this is a bit absurd.
It is absurd. I mean, the piece, the Merrick Garland piece of it, he will never live that down. The Jack Smith piece of it, I feel like Jack Smith was the one bright spot where he was just like, I'm going to do all of the things. But again, here, like, you have no obligation to be the nice guy here. And he's just been walked all over this entire time. Yeah. Why would he ever do something that is, you know, just the right thing to do here?
Because some people do what they think. Some people do what they believe is right. Some people do have morals and values, and they do believe in precedents, and they do believe in how things have been and done throughout the course of history in our country. And they do have some allegiance to the flag and to their country. They do believe in that, and not just their narrow-minded little slice of it. So, you know, I kind of get it.
If there was a rule in place, if there was some kind of law, if there was, you know, long-standing precedent, but again, like, he cited her, you know, like the Robert Herr report. What the hell obligation? Like, Robert Herr shouldn't be used for the standard for anything in our judicial system ever. That whole thing was just completely absurd and jacked up. So I don't know. I think that's kind of a crappy deal.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have resigned, though. I would have made Trump fire me because I would have taken that as a badge of honor. But that's just me.
He probably has some, you know, thing that he wants to start doing, or some other, like, the next job, or go back to The Hague, or whatever.
It could be looking for the next gig, because they all are. I gotta ask you about Rudy Giuliani. Evidently, another contempt charge. Second, I guess, right?
Yeah, this is his second contempt. And the judge, what was surprising to me is that the prosecutors were like, or the defense, or the petitioner team, right? The Georgia women, Ruby Freeman and Shea Moss, their lawyers were just sort of asking that he be fined. And the judge was pissed. The judge was like, you know what? I'm going to fine you, but I'm going to reserve the right to throw you in jail after this. Because if you do it again, I mean, and the conversation that happened in that courtroom where she was like, so basically you're telling me that that you're just going to keep defaming them, whatever, right? And yeah. He was like, yeah, pretty much. And she's like, okay, if you do this again, I'm throwing you in jail. And it was like, ooh.
But isn't that what his boy's been doing all along? Isn't that what Trump's been doing all along to E. Jean Carroll? I mean, they don't stop. This idea that they're going to back up, or they're going to admit to doing some wrong, even though they've been found guilty, that's just not in them.
Exactly. And so I mean, this is not, again, this is not a case where Trump can step in and be like, I pardon you, and therefore nothing can ever happen to you again. This is a civil case. So, you know, I don't know if you can you pardon somebody for contempt of court and get them out of prison? I don't know.
I do not know, but how far the hallowed doth fall. Yeah, because remember, he was America's mayor. And
that is the thing, right? Is that this is a guy who, it wasn't just the America's mayor. He was a lawyer, a prosecutor.
Yeah.
I mean, he was working under the DOJ, and how the mighty have fallen, right? Like, this dude is
comes down to money.
I mean, it's not just out of money. Like, he has completely damaged every single piece and part of whatever he was in his past. I mean, there is just literally nothing left of this guy. And it's just nothing but nonstop humiliation. Like, I don't know that Trump would even want to stand next to him at this point.
Yeah,
how bad it is.
Trump hasn't uttered his name.
Right? And he hasn't jumped in to help.
No, why would he? Why would he? When a guy like that is drowning, you just let him keep digging there, buddy. You keep digging.
Only one helping is Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon's been giving him, you know, some airtime and trying to help him out. But yeah, it's like,
I don't pay any attention to Steve Bannon. That is one dangerous dude right there.
I know. Some of us have to keep watching him all of you.
And God bless you for doing it. I got to get your thoughts on the cabinet thus far. Evidently, there's a meme going around, and maybe you can help me with this, but they're saying that 28 of the cabinet picks so far are people who are from Project 2025. 11 of them are Fox News hosts or contributors. 9 of them are lobbyists. 5 are billionaires. 4 are multimillionaires. And, well, one's a partridge in a pear tree.
Right.
Are we somewhere near the roundup there? Because remember, Project 2025, he had nothing to do with.
Of course. Of course. And we all knew that it was complete BS at the time. And so it's just proved to be a complete lie.
Another one?
I know, right? Surprise. We are going to start seeing these hearings next week and the week after. So this is going to be going on for a little bit, well past inauguration. So I think the first one we see maybe this week is Pete Hegseth. And I can't decide where I am on Hegseth. For a while, I was very, against him. This is terrible. I think he's going to completely annihilate his own reputation and destroy himself. And I'm not sure that that's a bad thing.
Yeah. I'm of the mindset, Trump's put these people out there. I'll let the Democrats go after them and bloody them up and then put them in the positions. Give him what he wants. Cause we've had this conversation. I think it's got to get ugly. I think these people have to be able to do what they want to do and show us who they are in a way that's going to be very painful. And we got to get through it.
And I'm still in that place. I keep waiting for the moment where I'm going to feel better about all of this. And I'm not going to be saying burn it to the ground, but I'm still in the burn it to the ground place. So I'll keep you posted.
I'm eagerly looking forward to that, because here's the thing. We're now finding out a little bit of what might be in the big, big beautiful bill.
Yes.
There's been some leaked information thus far about what kind of cuts they're going after. Who's first on the chopping block?
Literally the first thing on the list is they want to cut anything that has to do with the Affordable Care Act. Second on the list is any kind of Medicare. So it turns out that promise that all of the Republicans gave and that Trump said, I'm not going to touch Medicare again, it's a lie. Surprise.
Yeah.
So, I can't remember. I think it's maybe 400 and something billion and some change that they're going to try and cut out of Medicare. And it's one of the worst parts of it is, there's a thing that hospitals do where they will negotiate with Medicare about how much they're going to pay for something.
Right.
So Medicare will cover whatever you then have left over. They generally write off. They hang on to what those numbers are, and then they can apply with Medicare, with the government, for some of that to be paid back up to 65%. So basically, they're taking that piece away, which is going to put hospitals on the hook for that chunk of what isn't being paid.
Right.
We closed something like 700 hospitals in the last couple of years. Most of them are being closed in rural America, in red states. So basically, we're putting hospitals in the position where they're not going to be able to stay open. They're not going to be able to afford this stuff. And I don't know that that's necessarily something that Republicans want. I know it's not something that people in Medicare want.
It's not what the voters want, but it's what the ideologues want. And I see it just a little bit more sinister than that, than just, closing the hospitals and shifting the, I see this as them. This is that way that they're going to kill off Medicare, because nobody's going to be able to take it. And they're going to be forced into these privatized advantage plans that were already over half of the recipients of Medicare on these advantage plans. So it's going to kill off what's left of Medicare, and everyone's going to get United Health Group kind of 32% denial rate kind of Medicare. And you're going to be happy, because you're going to get tennis shoes, and you're going to get, they'll send you candy once a year and a thank you card. But actual healthcare, that will be a thing of the past.
I have United and I don't get crap. Where people are getting tennis shoes and stuff.
Haven't you seen the ads on TV? You could come with such and such a group for United, Medicare Advantage, and we'll get you gym memberships and tennis shoes, and we'll get you watches, and we'll get you all kinds of goodies and kinds of things that we'll pay for some stuff. But actual healthcare, no. Massive denial rates. Some of the folks who have emailed me with their horror stories of when they actually got sick with Medicare Advantage plans is heartbreaking.
Yeah. No, it is. And I mean, I think that we're going to have to come up with some kind of guide for people to figure out how they can get their medications from Canada. My grandfather actually did that for a long time. I want to say for like 10 years where his doctor just printed off his prescription and said, whatever you do with it is up to you. And we'd fax it up to Canada and they'd mail him his script in.
Wow.
So, I think it's going to end up being something like that where we're going to have buses where we start busing people into different countries so that they can have their operations or have their.
Well, that's already a thing. Medical tourism is already a thing. But Bernie Sanders used to take busloads of people from Vermont up into Canada to get their medication.
Yeah.
So it's already been done. The problem is in the wealthiest country in the world and in the history of humanity, to have that be how we treat our seniors. Well, how Republican of them. What else are we going after? What else is on the chopping block? What's Doge Boy and company going to be going after next?
So not surprisingly, welfare, every kind of welfare that there is. Yeah. SNAP, which what do they call it now? They call it TANF. Yeah. So that's on there. The food stamps thing is on there.
Because children when they're hungry, work harder. You get that. And when you've got hungry children that we're putting back into the workforce, it's going to be good, not just for the children, but it's going to be good for the corporations. And they'll be able to compete with their parents. And it'll help companies even lower wages even a little bit. It's going to be wonderful, Sarah. We're going to get those kids to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. They're going to be the next power generation.
I mean, basically, we're to a point now where kids are going to have to start working, right? We're going to have to repeal all of the child labor laws other than just like Arkansas and places so that they can get health care.
Yeah. No, Iowa. No, look. And look, if Elon Musk has his way, you know what's coming next? No more natural births. Everything's cesarean because we want big-brained children.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, this whole the weirdness, right, with Elmo and I know I keep calling him different names and I feel bad because Elmo is actually lovable. Right. But RFK Jr. and Elmo are like the two worst things that you could put together. Yep. It's just one conspiracy feeding on the other. And you know what?
No, I've hit a point, I don't get it. You know, and this is where, you know, George Carlin was always my favorite comedian. And I think one of the greatest social commentators that I've ever come across. He said when he stopped caring about the outcome and just watched it happen, it got a lot more entertaining and he was able to be a lot more clear in his thinking. And I've kind of reserved myself the place of I can't stop what's coming. So we've got to pay attention. We've got to have eyes open. And then, you know, knowing I can't change the outcome, I have to watch it happen. I have to, you know, do as much as I can to prepare to fix down the road what damage happens. But for the time being, I'm an observer in this.
And on Facebook, you're not going to actually find out what really happens because now people can just make stuff up.
Make stuff up. Because I heard Mark Zuckerberg. No, I don't know. I'm not getting into all of the things that Mark Zuckerberg has done.
Of which there are many.
But Sarah, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Keep up the great work. Rawstory.com, the website, if you want to check out Sarah Burris's work. Last thing, real quick. Evidently, I've had a couple listeners not thrilled with your social media profiles because you say everything you say is a joke. They want you to change that.
Oh, well, see, the thing is that helps save me from when people think that I'm being serious. And I'm really not.
Okay. Well, there you go. But Sarah, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Everybody have a good week.
Our good friend, Sarah Burris. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1942. That was the day that President Franklin Delano Roosevelt reestablished the National War Labor Board. just a little over a month before the United States had entered World War II. In the days after the attack on Pearl Harbor, Congress voted to join the global conflict. Soon after the war was declared, the president brought together representatives from both business and labor. The president won commitments of no strikes or lockouts during the conflict. He wanted further assurances, however, that the great industrial war machine would continue to run smoothly. He looked back on how labor disputes were handled during World War I as a model. During that earlier global conflict, President Woodrow Wilson had set up a National War Labor Board. President Roosevelt kept the same name for his board, but charged it with even more sweeping powers. The board consisted of 12 members, 4 from labor, 4 from business, and 4 from the general public. But the overall composition of those selected tilted in favor of business. Any labor dispute that might impact the war effort was sent before the board. Since practically the entire United States economy was part of the war engine, this gave the group significant power. In establishing the board, President Roosevelt declared, "The national interest demands that there shall be no interruptions of any work which contributes to the effective prosecution of the war." The board played a decisive role in setting wages for many workers during the war. Labor protested the hardship of stagnant wages, as the raises determined by the board did not keep up with the cost of living, as prices were driven up by wartime scarcities. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickssmithshow.com. Gotta tell you, I love Sarah Burris. One of my best friends, one of the people I look to for some really great reporting. And look, when she starts talking about the cuts that are coming, and understand, Medicare has been, Medicaid, all of that have been on the right-wing wet dream list for a very long time. The Republican Party as a whole has wanted to slash and burn Medicare and Medicaid for decades, and did a great job during the Bush years. They put the poison pill in there to allow these advantage plans to negotiate prescription drug prices and give all these other sweeteners while denying care. They have done what they needed to do. And as I said, we're over the halfway point. More than half of seniors are now on these privatized plans, which means that at some point, they're going to either dig really deep into their pockets or just not get care. And understand, we've done that to seniors because we've lowered the, through inflation and through not raising the COLAs for Social Security, we've given them this choice of, hey, you know, I don't really need the health care now. You know, I can save some money on what I'm going to pay out in health care by going over here. I won't have to pay as much for my prescription drugs, so I can buy food or I can keep a roof over my head. We've done this, the seniors, I would argue, on purpose. So am I surprised that they want to go after and cut traditional Medicare more? Am I surprised by that? Not even a little bit. Because it is part of the bigger scheme to destroy what is left of traditional Medicare. And this is why I keep coming back to this place of, when are we going to, and look, maybe we as a society want Medicare gone. Maybe we as a society really like being denied access to care. Maybe we like those letters, and maybe we like a healthcare system that's hell-bent on, well, you know, the insurance company, they're not going to pay for it. And, you know, in coming weeks here on the show, I'm going to be talking a lot about that issue alone. The fact that our entire healthcare system is based on, well, I don't know that the insurance company is going to pay it. Not whether the patient needs it. Not whether it's something that's medically necessary or something that's going to help make lives better. No, no. But will the insurer pay for it? That's the frustrating part. And understand, seniors haven't really had to deal with that. Question is, how are they going to deal with that when they have to, when we've fully privatized Medicare? That's going to be a question I've got. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Are you looking forward to the Project 2025 plan that Trump's going to impose on us with all of his cabinet members who wrote the damn thing? It's going to be interesting. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program? Make sure you grab the podcast. Or if you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. And as always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Rick@therickssmith.com.
This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM. W248DE Wisconsin Rapids. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. Almost a week after it broke out, the Palisades fire in Los Angeles County is only 14% contained. The Eaton fire in Altadena is 33% contained. And L.A. County Fire Chief Anthony Maroney says the lull in the Santa Ana winds is ending.
Severe fire weather conditions will continue through Wednesday.
At least 24 people have died. KCBS's Matt Bigler.
Fire evacuees are picking up N95 masks, water, and other emergency supplies. Chris Orris with the city of Malibu says over 100 homes were lost here, and not all of them were beachside mansions.
Not everyone in Malibu is a millionaire, and so we're trying to support every single individual and resident that we can.
Matt Bigler for CBS News, Malibu, California.
President Biden says it will take billions of dollars to rebuild. A close call in the air over Phoenix on Saturday. CBS News has learned that alarms sounded in both cockpits